dangerous temperatures for the next few days, the next week or so. Shelley Ragel from SPAR on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shelley, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great. Thank you so much. Say hi to Mr. Weather, radio legend.
Good morning, Mr. Weather.
Well, she didn't know what to say, did you? Good morning, Shelley. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just doing great. Thank you.
Shelley, we've got triple digits for the next few days, and city has opened cooling centers. Tell us about the cooling centers, where they are, and what people can expect.
Well, throughout the city, when it gets to be 100-degree temperatures, we open our recreation centers to just for cooling centers. We'll still have all our normal activities going on, our summer camps, but we set up an area just if you need a place to come in and get some relief from the heat. There's places to sit down. We have water because being hydrated is really important during these high temperatures. So we open up many of our big centers, six of our big centers that are, you know, geographically spread out there all this throughout, and just a place where you could come and cool off for a few minutes.
And you've got, you say, six locations?
Yes. And those are on our website. And actually, there's five locations. They're on our website, and you can go to that, or I'll run through them for you real quick. Valencia, David Raines, Bilberry Airport, and Bill Cockrell. So all of those are there from 8 to 8. Saturdays, we're there from 8 to 3. And as I said, we've got plenty of water. So if you're having trouble getting enough hydration, just come in, take a few minutes, an hour or so, and cool yourself off.
Now, did I see a report that said something about the libraries are also operating kind of as cooling centers?
Yes, the libraries have always been very cooperative to, you know, remind people that they're your public library and that they can be a great place to come and cool off.
Shelley, did you say these cooling centers are not open on Sunday? Is that correct?
No, depending on the temperature on Sunday, we may have to extend the hours to Sunday, but normally we have not been.
Okay.
But it depends on if we continue with the 100-plus degrees, we'll open them on Sunday.
Yeah. And it's only triple digits? Like if it's 98, you guys, it's only going to be 100? Is that right?
Yes. Once we reach 100, normally we used to do 100 for three consecutive days. That used to be the protocol. But the last few years, just that first day, because leading up to that 100, it's normally very warm. So we've just started, once it reached that 100 degrees, we start opening them.
Is that heat index temperature, or is that the actual temperature before you open it up?
That's the actual temperature.
Okay.
I'm looking at the 26th. It's going to be 99. That's this coming Sunday.
Okay.
But,
and you know, after we've been 100, we may decide on this Sunday we better stay open on that Sunday.
Right. You're looking at 100, 102 on Tuesday, Wednesday 102, Thursday 100. So all of next week just about.
Yes.
Looks like they're going to need to be open.
Yes. And that's why we work with people like the library, the malls, people like that, to also provide alternatives to our sites when needed.
Shelley, tell us about the pools. Almost all the pools are open.
I knew that Aaron had taught you well. I was going to say the other alternative to cooling down is we have spray grounds throughout the city. There's one almost in every neighborhood. And then we have the one big one downtown on the riverfront. But every neighborhood has a spray ground. What a great place to cool off. All of our swimming pools are Bill Cockrell, David Raines, Airport, and Quirby's are all open for swimming. Great places to cool down also. But, you know, got to take your precautions when you're out there in this heat, even at those locations. But they are all great places to cool off.
And you don't have to be a little kid to take advantage of like the spray parks and things, do you?
No. You know, like I said, we have 11 of them throughout the city, so there's a place you certainly can cool down. I've seen people down on the riverfront, you know, adults just sitting there in the fountain while their kids play.
Do y'all supply the soap at these tombs? And, you know,
well, we have to
take a shower and stuff.
Well, we hope that hope that we don't have to.
Well, you've never dealt with Mr. Weather, I guess. Yeah. Yes. Or Aaron. You know, Aaron got banned right. at one point.
Oh. Yes, that's right.
And was it because of soap? Right. Wait, but I think we think she got a reprieve. Shelly, thank you so much. We appreciate the update, and we will talk to you again soon.
Y'all stay cool, and everybody stay hydrated.
Thank you. We'll talk to you again. Micah McCarty, Mr. Weather in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on that free Keel app.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Got a busy morning scheduled for this morning. Aaron on vacation. She'll be back on Monday. She's doing fine. She's just she's got a lot of time off. So
boy, does she!
So she'll be back on Monday. Thomas Avalone going to be joining us later on this morning, and I'm looking forward to next hour. Mike and Mark Mangum from Twin Blends Northwest Louisiana History Hunters going to join us. Always fun.
Always a blast with those guys.
And they've got a new film called Iron and Thunder, and I'll let them explain, but okay. It looks fascinating. They had kind of a preview last night. I wasn't able to go. They told me about it, but I've got family in town from like Seattle.
Oh.
That I haven't seen in years. My mom's sister and husband, and so we had dinner plans already.
Yeah, can't.
So I didn't get to make that.
Can't make them all.
I don't know what put the burr under my saddle again about this, but this came up again yesterday, and I don't understand why more people aren't disturbed by the Chinese ownership of Stonebridge and Old Oaks golf clubs. It's Eugene Xi is listed as the owner, and they call him now a former member of the Chinese Communist Party.
Oh.
And he owns 300 and some odd acres surrounding one of the most vital, critical military installations in our country.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that the Chinese government isn't involved still? I wouldn't believe it.
It's a little bit of a head scratcher, for sure.
It also bothers me that it doesn't seem to bother anybody else. And
well, I didn't even know about it until you just said it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And apparently he's been listed as the owner since 2013. And Joe Biden was vice president in 2013. And we know He sold this out to the Chinese during his presidential term. We all remember the quote weather balloon that flew across the entire country.
Boy, that was something, wasn't it?
Ended up being a Chinese spy balloon and didn't get shot down until it passed over the East Coast. It's inexcusable. It's unconscionable that they allowed that.
Basically, all the time it needed to see what it needed to see.
Absolutely.
Gave it all the time in the world.
Absolutely. And they finally did shoot it down, but the footage was not stored on that device. It was beamed back.
Right.
And then we had this massive drone incursion just a few months ago over Barksdale. And this wasn't a little drone you buy on Amazon. And and somebody went, oh, I didn't realize I wasn't supposed to be in that airspace. They were multiple huge drones that couldn't be jammed. Normally, Barksdale, if a drone does get into airspace, they have the technology to jam it and knock it down. These weren't able to be jammed.
I've heard tell that, you know, somebody with just a regular civilian drone, if they're too close to Barksdale, drone won't work.
I talked to a friend of mine that does commercial production, and they sometimes use drone footage for clients, and they'll fly over the business and get some really cool drone footage. And he told me we were going to do some drone footage that was near Barksdale for a client because we couldn't even fly.
Yeah.
It wouldn't. Our drone wouldn't even fly. And so the fact that we had multiple of these huge drones that were over Barksdale, over our B-52s, over them loading tonnage into the aircraft.
Right.
And everybody, where are they coming from? What happened? Well, I don't know. Did you check maybe the golf cart barn at Stonebridge? It is very disturbing to me. And I don't understand why. First of all, I don't understand how it even happened that the Chinese Communist Party is allowed to own hundreds of acres around our military installations. And Barksdale isn't the only one. I got Scott McKay from the Hayride going to be joining us in the 8 o'clock hour, and we're going to talk more about this because I reached out to Mike Johnson, but I haven't heard back yet. And when I saw the Wall Street Journal article about his 1,500 unread text messages,
oh God,
I was like, okay, well, I get it. Thousands of emails that haven't gone answered yet because he's just got so much going on. I want to talk more about this. I'm very disturbed about this and bothered that nobody else seems to be bothered.
Unreal.
Coming up, we did talk with Michael Corpin from SWEPCO, getting some tips to how to deal with this heat. That's in about 10 minutes from right now. Mike and McCarty, Aaron on Vacation, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, temperatures in the triple digits, cooling centers around Shreveport, Bossier, air conditioning systems are running at capacity. We spoke with Michael Corbin, the external affairs manager at SWEPCO, about some tips on how to deal with this heat. Hear what he's got to say coming up just after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Mike and McCarty, Aaron on vacation. Mr. Weather agreed to come in this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you so much.
Do I have to wear this dress of Aaron?
Aaron doesn't wear a dress. I don't know why you're wearing one.
Oh, never mind then.
Thank you for coming in on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from SWEPCO. Michael Corbin joining us. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Mike and Mr. Weather. What
good
an
morning.
Honor.
I know, isn't this great?
Not that much of an honor.
I didn't know if you needed to finish your dress conversation and get me later or just what.
I wasn't expecting it, so it kind of caught me off guard, yeah. No, we've got some dangerous temperatures for the next few days. Is this going to put a pretty good strain on our grid?
Well, you know, we monitor the grid closely every day along with our partner, Southwest Power Pool. And so far, all the forecasts that we're looking at and the generation that we have, everything is rolling on as it should. But when it's hot like this, we always do ask our customers to, you know, be aware if there's ways that you can conserve any energy that's important. And if we get to some point where, you know, not alarms are sounding, but we feel like we're getting tight on energy availability, then we'll communicate that to our customers. But for the most part, right now, everything looks great.
When I signed on to the Weather Channel earlier this morning, I looked at the 10-day forecast, and I was like, I told Ruben, I said, holy cow, it switched from yesterday. They've updated. We've got 104 to 106 for the next 14 days. And then I said, yeah. Oh, wait, that's Dallas.
But we're pretty close.
let me switch back to Shreveport. We're going to cool down to a nice, pleasant 95 later this week. So we're not looking at triple digits every day, but it is going to be hot.
It is. And, you know, we forget that a year ago we were having the same conversation. It was in the high 90s. That's just how our weather goes through the cycles here. But it's dangerous. You know, we encourage everybody to check on your neighbors. If you've got older family members, check on them because they're easily dehydrated if their houses get warm. And, you know, another thing that I think is important is we've talked about this previously, we're doing a lot of work in the area, forestry work, replacing equipment to, you know, provide more reliable service. And a lot of times that causes a brief outage with our customers. So we need to have your contact information in our system. So I would encourage everybody to use the SWEPCO app, go to SWEPCO.com, or call us and make sure we have a good phone number for you. Because if we have a planned outage to replace a pole or a piece of equipment, we're going to call all those impacted customers the day before so they can make preparations.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Let me interject here. And Michael, I would have to compliment SWEPCO on doing that. Letting people know when the electricity is out, because ours went out the other day, and we hardly ever lose electricity, but it went out for maybe 10 seconds. Yep. And our phone went off almost immediately. There is a powered outages in your area.
That app is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it really is. And the technique that we have been able to incorporate both in our lines and you know, the equipment that the public sees, as well as what we're able to do behind the scenes, really provides a much better experience for our customer. Because the worst thing that you want, whether it's freezing cold or it's scorching hot, is to have an outage and not know, well, does the power company know this? Is it going to be a day? Is it going to be 10 minutes? Is it going to be 3 hours? And we are really focused on getting as much of the customer as we can.
We're talking with Michael Corbin, External Affairs Manager at SWEPCO. Huh? Huh?
Yeah.
I didn't have to ask you.
Around town, that SWEPCO guy.
That's right. Michael, I think it was Friday we lost power, and it was a beautiful day. Sun was shining. And you said there was something over at Ackard and Piermont or Southfield that had happened, and it affected like 4,500 customers, including restaurants and businesses.
Right. It was a large outage on a Friday afternoon, and it did impact the Line Avenue corridor and some other areas. And, you know, probably contributed to or the heat contributed to it a little bit, but equipment failure, a line comes down, and we had to go out and get that fixed. And, you know, our folks out in the field are to be commended, because they are out there day and night in this heat working in these conditions. And we appreciate what they do. And we're also making sure that we're taking care of our employees and really focusing on hydration, signs of heat issues, because, you know, we need everybody going home safe at night and being able to work.
And if somebody sees a crew, because like you say, and I've said, these power line crews are the unsung heroes, man. We always recognize first responders, and nobody thinks about the power crews that are out usually in storms,
right?
Or extreme conditions like this. So again, thank you, and I wish I would have had some water, bottled water or something to pass along to them.
Yeah, and many people will do that. They'll hand out water, Gatorade, or you know, even homemade cookies sometimes, and you know, they certainly appreciate that. And you know, if you go by and you see a crew doing work, take a second and look at the clothes they have on, because certainly they have on long sleeve flame retardant shirts, pants, usually very you know, elbow length gloves, hard hat. They're not dressed for the hot weather. They're dressed for safety, and it's a double burden on those folks as well.
Now, as people are preparing for this kind of stretch of triple digits and extreme heat, and when you factor in the humidity, I know people go they're so tired of hearing about the heat index. I remember I saw a T-shirt in New Orleans one time. It said, "It's not the heat, it's the stupidity." But let's talk about some of the things people can do to kind of help. What do you recommend as far as your system and how to keep everything running efficiently?
Well, sure, and there's little things anybody can do. You know, during these periods of high 90s and low 100s. Keep your curtains closed as much as you can. Keep sunlight out of your house. If you're doing laundry, simple thing like that, maybe do laundry, run your clothes dryer in the evening instead of during the heat of the day. And if there's any way that you can adjust that thermostat up a degree or two without causing health issues in the house, that's a good thing too, because when we get past this and we get a month down the road, and the next billing cycle hits, there's going to be a little shock on everybody's face, because mm-hmm. your bill's going to be more, not because the cost of electricity went up, but because you're using more to run your HVAC unit and all that. And it's also a good time, if you have the capability to, if you've not had your HVAC unit serviced in the past couple of years, have somebody come out, look at it, make sure it's got all the Freon it needs and all the coolant it needs. And it's operating efficiently, because mm-hmm. that's the biggest user of electricity in houses in our area.
Michael, is there a temperature that we should be setting our thermostats on to maybe to save a little bit of electricity, save a little bit on our bill?
Well, that's really a personal decision. You know, some people just can't tolerate anything above 72 to 74.
My wife would freeze out if I did that.
You know, 76 is maybe a good starting number. I've seen some facts and figures where every 2 degrees up or down, you know, what that may cost you. But all of our circumstances are going to be different. You know, how our house is insulated, what we can tolerate, and what activities we're doing. You know, if you have ceiling fans, turn them on. Let those things run.
Yeah.
Even if you have a box fan or something, use that to augment and get some airflow, mm-hmm. and that uses much less energy than crank your HVAC unit down another 4, 5, 6 degrees.
And Michael, don't you offer like an average monthly billing plan?
We do, and this is a perfect time when that comes in. You know, we can put your account on average billing, so that not only helps you budget, but it also takes the spikes out when we have extremely hot or extremely cold weather. And we have lots of folks that can talk you through that process. You know, you can do it online, either through the app or our website, or you can call us and we'll help get that set up for you.
Michael Corbin, External Affairs Manager at SWEPCO. Michael, thanks so much. We appreciate you jumping on with us.
Good talking to you both. Have a great day.
We'll talk to you soon. Micah McCarty, Mr. Weather in for the vacationing Aaron McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Not
big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Erin on vacation. She's just taking some of her time off. Everything's fine. In the studio this morning, Thomas Avalone is joining us. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
So were you glad to get out of the house?
Well, you know, it's fine. My wife is listening.
A brand new dad. Not your first time dad, but a new dad.
We do have a two-week-old at home.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Doing all of the two-week-old things.
So tell us, boy, in 30 seconds, boy, girl.
A little boy.
See, those are the only two options.
That's right. Yeah, that's it. Well, you know, we haven't asked him. So I'm going to go with boy.
He identifies as a boy.
That's right. So yeah. It's little August Avalone. We named him August Luigi. My father's name was Luigi. So
oh, that is so cool.
So, and of course, I may have mentioned the last time my wife, while she was pregnant, was reading Lonesome Dove.
I'm reading it right now.
And Augustus struck her.
Yes.
And it sounded appropriate. I was born in August. My mother was born in August. So I said, why not? Let's go with August.
Love it. We'll catch up. Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, joining us after the news top of the hour. Always fun. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCurdy. One 7 FM 710 Keel. Micah McCarty, Thomas Avalone in for Erin. Oh, yes, the Red Bull's finally kicking in. In studio with us this morning, Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks
Mike.
For inviting us.
Thanks for coming out. Empty-handed, but thanks for coming out.
No donuts today.
We didn't bring him donuts. He's mad at us. invited back.
No, not at all. You guys had a fun event last night. You debuted a new film. Well,
It was night before last, wasn't it? Or was it Tuesday night? I think you're a couple days behind.
Tuesday night was last night, dude.
Wait a minute. Is this Wednesday? We're retired, so we don't know. No, it's Monday night. Sorry. It was Monday night.
It was. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, tell us about this film called Iron and Thunder and Porter's
Return
Fleet.
To the Red River.
So tell us about this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've known about it through Dr. Gary Joyner's books and stuff. But when you read it and you see black and white pictures.
It happened. Let me cut you off, Mike.
Okay,
you
got to
explain. It happened during the Civil War, during the Red River campaign.
The same time that Banks was coming up to capture Shreveport and the battle at Mansfield and then Pleasant Hill, and it was the exact same time Porter was coming up the Red River with Admiral David Dixon Porter was coming up the Red River with his 108-ship Navy or 108-ship fleet. And anyway, they
108
were
108
ships
coming up the Red River.
Exactly. Yes. And you can imagine the results of that. They had snags. They were getting stuck.
Low.
I mean, and these are battleships.
Yeah.
I mean, ironclads, basically like battleships and stuff.
It would have been like the people seeing these come up the Red River would have been like if we stood out there and saw battleships and aircraft carriers coming up. That's how menacing they looked. They were like tanks coming up the river.
They do. I was looking at some of your pictures. They look like tanks or submarines.
Yeah. Some of them
look enclosed,
like that.
Yeah. Almost looking.
Yeah. A couple of them are called monitors, and they set low to the water.
Those are the ones that look like submarines.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But they
had
paddle wheels, had support ships, and they had ironclads, tin clads. And these were really heavily armored.
It's a fascinating story. Dr. Gary Joyner has about four or five books on the Red River campaign that talks about it, and it is so fascinating.
I've got to get in touch with him. I missed Eric Brock.
Yep.
I used to love to read his stuff.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And Gary's keeping that going.
Oh, yeah. He's the rock star of the history around here.
Yes.
And Dr. Cheryl White, they're rock stars.
Dr. White. And I know Cheryl.
Yeah.
I worked with her husband for 20 years.
Yeah.
and Ernie Robertson as well.
Yes.
And I've gotten a chance to talk with Ernie. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. But I tell you what, John Andrew Prime, he is wealth of knowledge, too, on history. Those people, they know so much more about history. I mean, we're not experts in any means, but they are. And it's just fascinating to listen to them.
I love history, but more specifically, I love Shreveport history.
Yes, yeah. Now, you said that one ship sunk. Where is the location?
Near Montgomery on the Red River, Montgomery, Louisiana. Yeah. It sunk on its way out because it hit a torpedo, a Confederate torpedo.
Well, and when you say torpedo, they were actually mines, but they called them torpedoes back then.
And it sunk. It sunk. I mean, it hit a torpedo, a mine, and it sunk where they were able to raise it somehow, and it continued 40 more miles, and then it hit a snag in the Red River near Montgomery and sunk. And so Porter had a choice to either abandon it or blow it up, and he blew it up.
Yeah, they blew it up.
And it sunk, and then another one of the ships coming over it hit it, and it sunk. So there's two ships on top of each other. So the Eastport is what it was called. It actually sunk a ship in the Civil War, but it was his own ship, his own fleet.
Yeah. Now, where is Montgomery?
It is below below Alexandria. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I believe it's below Alexandria. Or was it before?
It's below Alexandria. Grand Accord.
Yeah.
Below Grand Accord.
Yeah. So where did you find the footage? Well, I guess there was somebody filming the fleet came up the Red River.
Actually, these pictures that we have, they're, Mike, you're crazy. They had a photographer. They hired a photographer to travel with them. That's where we get a lot of these pictures of the fleet, actually. So that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'd just hear
about it. And we took those pictures and used AI to make them move.
Yeah, we colorized them. And then we have them come alive in video clips. And we tell a story about when they first enter the Red River and then where they go up and turn around and then when they leave the Red River. So it's a 20-minute video, and it tells a story. So it's pretty fascinating. Of course, it doesn't get into every little battle and every little nuance because there was so much, but it tells a general overall picture. It tells a story that, most people didn't know. We didn't know until.
No. Who knew that there was a 110-ship fleet coming to burn Shreveport?
Crazy. Yeah. Well, they were coming to they had a lot, several different goals. Shreveport was the capital of the Confederacy.
Cotton.
And a lot of it was come up here and get cotton.
They wanted our cotton because up north, the textiles were, President Lincoln was in the middle of a re-election, and he was wanting to get elected. So, and all those textile mills in New England were sitting there barren and empty. And so they wanted to come down and get the cotton to bring it back. 108 warships would carry a lot of cotton.
Yeah.
It was like 1,000 pounds a piece they could carry.
Oh, no, not 1,000. Not 1,000 tons.
I'm sorry.
So. Yeah.
They would carry
it's crazy.
Cotton.
And how did the ships, I guess just river navigation?
Well, some of them had like a 9-foot draft, but some of the other ones had like a 3-foot draft, so they could go in shallow water.
And from where did they come?
They come from down the Mississippi in front of Vicksburg, and then up through the Chaffalai River into the Red River, right there at Simsport.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story.
It really is
a story. And tell them, Mike, why you don't hear a lot about the story.
Well, okay, the reason, like Gary Joyner said, the reason you don't hear a lot about Porter's fleet is because the Union basically got their butts kicked. You'll see they got their butts kicked. The Navy got their butts kicked. And they were embarrassed, so they didn't talk about it. And the Confederates, they lost the war, and so they weren't, they weren't going to boast about it.
Okay.
Interesting.
It's a lesser known story, but it's very fascinating.
It is.
And this video brings it to life, and it tells the story, So it kind of.
All right, I want to talk more about this. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, Thomas Avalone in for the vacationing Aaron McCarty. 101.7 FM 710 Keel.
Of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
In studio with Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, Thomas Avalone, and for the vacationing Aaron McCarty. And you guys just debuted Iron and Thunder, a 20-minute historic short film about Porter's Fleet.
Yes.
A lot of people may not have even heard of Porter's Fleet, myself included. 110 ships coming up the Red River, basically to burn Shreveport.
To capture Shreveport.
Because it was the capital of the Confederacy at the time.
Yes. and steel cotton.
Yep,
that was one of the goals.
So, but you said they got
two things.
They got their butts kicked. Well,
there's actually four things. If you
okay. Well, I'm talking about Wichita Porter.
Oh, Wichita Porter, you're right.
Was two things. Okay, they were coming up. Okay, they, first of all,
this is during the Civil War.
During the Civil War, the same time as the Battle of Mansfield. Okay, Banks is coming up to capture Shreveport and stopped at Mansfield and then retreated back to Pleasant Hill. But at the same exact time, Porter's fleet's going up the Red River parallel, well, you know, at the same time. Well, the Confederates blow a dam at Tones Bayou.
Kirby Smith ordered the dam to be blown.
Yep. And so the water is directed from the Red River to go down Tones Bayou into Bayou Pierre, so it lowers the Red River.
It was already low, and so this lowered it a lot.
Okay, and then the Confederates sent
So the Confederates did that.
They did that
to strand the ship.
Well, to make it difficult for them
to get up. And then the Confederates also sent one of the big steamboats, the biggest one that's ever been on the Mississippi River.
330 feet long, like 880 tons. The New Falls City steamboat.
Yep, and down by Loggy Bayou around Scopiana Plantation and turned it sideways in the river and sunk it from bank to bank.
It was 15 feet on each side of the bank sunk.
Sunk it in the middle. Okay. They wasn't getting past that. Porter got there and they left.
This is before they got to Shreveport.
That's before they got to Shreveport. Okay. They were about not very far
from
Shreveport.
About 30 miles or something like that.
Yeah. And anyway, they got there and Porter on his flagship was the first he looked through his telescope and saw a note. And it said, what did it say, Mark?
It was basically, they said, the Confederates left, General Porter, we're inviting you to a party, a ball in Shreveport. Hope you can attend, but if you can't, we totally understand. We'll have a party. What it says, definitely, but we created a note for it. And it said, and then his comment was,
that's the smartest thing that I've ever seen the Confederates do. And he chuckled about it.
He saw the steamboat and all that, and he had to laugh. That's the smartest thing I saw.
And then at the same time, he got note that that Banks had failed at Mansfield and was retreating to Pleasant Hill, and so he turned around as well.
Yeah, that's what turned him around. The low water levels, the New Falls City, and then the defeats at Mansfield and Pleasant Hill. Yeah. So they started on their way back, and that's when the Confederates opened up on them.
They were like, you done started a hornet's nest. And
they were getting
crazy
pounded on the way back out. So.
But what was weird is
from troops along the banks.
Cavalry troops. What was the weirdest thing? There was a battle between a cavalry to General Tom Green and several of the ships, the Osage being one of them, which is the one that set low
like
in the
a
water.
Submarine.
First time a periscope was ever used, the guy was on the Osage, and he looked through the periscope.
Well, people were getting sniped off. So he said, I think I can create something where we can look out.
Y'all are like old married couple.
But anyway, they looked out, and he shot through the
periscope.
He looked through the periscope and shot, and actually decapitated General Tom Green on horseback, and then that stopped everything.
Yeah, when they saw that, they stopped that. So, but they still pounded on the way out. So,
You brought in a huge cannonball
fragment.
Bring it on the radio.
Can you show it, Mike?
Let's hold it up to the microphone. But this is just a segment.
It's an 18-pound fragment, and that's just probably a small piece. Some of these cannonballs weighed 135 pounds. Yeah. So that they were shooting, and we were metal detecting in the past, and we found grape shots and cannonball fragments from those battles.
Yeah.
So
we can even tell which ships they come from too.
Yeah.
We told him the location and he said, I'll tell you exactly which ship. And that's the ship that we thought. He said that's it.
And we're gonna have these fragments available to view at August the 22nd.
Yeah, be sure to come out August 22nd, Mansfield State Historic Site. We're gonna debut this video.
That's my next question.
Yeah. Dr. Gary, the main thing is Dr. Gary Joyner's gonna be there talking about it, and we're just there to show our video, but he's going to be the main draw, but you got to come see it. August the 22nd, 10 a.m., Mansfield State Battle Park.
How are you going to show the film? Is there, you're going to have a screen?
There's a big TV in there.
There's a big screen in there. So.
Okay. So they have a visitor center or something?
Oh, yes, a Mansfield visitor center.
So okay.
There's a room.
It'll be
set
inside
up.
Air conditioning and stuff like
inside
that.
Inside air conditioning. So.
Okay. And this is August
the 22nd, 10 a.m.
So about a month from
it's
right now.
It's a Saturday, yes. Yep.
So people can't, like, you don't have it posted online or anything yet?
No, not the video. We won't. We're taking the video and we're going around to different places. After this presentation, we'll be showing it to different places. You know, yeah. Of course, because we charge to do, you know, presentations at different places. And so
we've had a couple sneak peek showings of it at our friend Marshall Jones's office. And so.
I saw some pictures on that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Everybody seems to love it, so.
Yeah. It looks fascinating.
We had fun making it. It took us about a month and a half to put it all together. Stayed up late many nights working on it and tweaking it. And there's always something you can think you can do better with it. But we had so much fun making this. So.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've often thought, like, okay, an artist painting a picture. Okay, maybe you're doing... How do you know when to stop?
There's always something you want to change. I mean, it's like
there's something we can change right now.
There's things that I'd like to change right now, but Mike's like, no, that's it. I'm done with it. That would take me too long.
That's what George Lucas said. He said films are never completed; they're just released.
That's it.
Well, and he's gone back even the original Star Wars.
Oh, sure.
We even made part of the video with the new Fall City. We showed it and to somebody who knows the area, and he told us, well, the landscape's a little different. And so we went back last night and changed the landscape to match. So we've changed the video to make it more realistic. So
isn't it incredible?
Yeah.
Can you guys hang with us?
Sure,
Because I want to talk to you a little bit more. We got to take a break. Sure. Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. This is 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Mike and Mark Mangum in studio, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters. We're going to take a quick break, have a little bit longer segment after the break. Thomas Avalone in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Mike and Mark Mangum in studio. Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. We've been talking about your film, Iron and Thunder, which people can see coming up on the 23rd.
22nd.
That's what I said, Mike. The 22nd. I put it in my phone.
I didn't write it down.
Okay, sorry. But I want to talk also because you guys have done, it's just invaluable. Truly invaluable what you have. If you stopped today, you've created such an archive of Shreveport history through your Facebook page. You can do a search and look up things.
Yep. And on regular Facebook, just search Twin Blends and whatever subject you're looking for, and it should pull it up.
We were talking during the break. I used to work at what was at the time Chelsea's in the Square. Mm-hmm. And I knew at that time it was such an historic building. It's Blind Tiger now, downtown. When I worked there, it was in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So not even is redone. I swear, we ate there the other night. We had some family. We went and ate. Those are the same chairs and tables that when I was there. Wow. I'm not kidding.
Oh, really?
Those cane bent back chairs with the little bitty seats. And those are the same ones that I was there.
Yeah.
But up on the third floor, which is not open to the public, but as a worker, I remember going up there. There were cockfighting pens.
Really? Really?
Have you been up to the third floor?
No, we'll have to go now.
And I asked the kid that was waiting on us at the time. I said, "Have you ever been up to the third floor?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Are the cockfighting pits still up there?" And he wasn't real sure.
Yeah,
he Just said sometimes late at night we can still hear the chickens.
Yeah.
It's a haunted floor. Yeah. They stay away.
Yeah.
But outside the side door, I remember, was a tile mosaic that said Buckaloo. Wow.
Buckaloo Hardware, yeah.
Because it was back in the, I don't know, 40s, 50s. Yeah. It was Buckaloo Hardware, but even before that, it was something different.
Dry goods, back in
an old building. Yeah,
old
beautiful
building.
Old building.
Oh,
old
pictures. Down on the riverfront.
Every old picture that we have, it's in there. It's in that.
Yes, that historic building that's been hit by cars.
Yeah, well before the bridge was built, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got pictures over the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s getting hit. That gets hit.
You know what's funny? You've got a picture of that building. It was Chelsea's.
Yep.
It's a black and white picture of that building.
Yes.
And in front, right in front of the front door, is my wife's car.
That's what you told us.
Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is so cool. We love that.
It's like, okay, that means when that picture was taken, I was in the building.
Right.
Probably. Tending bar.
Probably doing the cockfights on the third floor.
Yeah, right.
Your wife was unloading and the chickens for the cockfight.
She was there. I just thought that is so cool.
Yeah.
Because it was like from the mid-80s, mid-80s.
Yep.
And I said, oh, my gosh. I told my wife, I said, there's your car. It was such a unique paint job on that Ford Escort.
Yeah.
It had a kind diagonal stripe on it. It was very strange. Yeah. So that was cool. So you guys, you've got this premiere coming up on the 25th.
The 22nd, Mike. Write it down. I know you're kidding.
Everybody.
You can't be that dumb.
August 22nd at Marshall Jones's.
Well,
office.
No, okay, no.
No, no that's no. Mansfield. Mansfield.
So
I am confused.
Marshall Jones was when we showed the sneak peek. But,
that's right. Yeah. That's
coming
right.
up August the 22nd at the Mansfield State Historic Site, the battlefield down there. It's indoor air conditioning, but we're going to have it 10 a.m. Saturday, August the 22nd. Everybody's invited.
I know it's hot right now. Nobody wants to get out and do outside stuff. Yeah. Are you planning on doing any more history tours, the walking tours?
Probably when it gets cooler.
When it gets cooler.
So we don't have anything scheduled right now.
No history tours.
Too hot.
Is there art walk going on?
Yeah, they still do the art walk.
They're still doing the art walks. Are y'all participating in those?
We haven't sent that one time that we did
it. We've
been so busy.
Okay.
So, we need to.
But that's a great experience.
Isn't that funny? You're both retired and you've been so busy.
It's been crazy.
Yeah. We do it to ourselves.
Just,
we don't have nothing to do this day. Let's do this. Let's take a trip. Let's do this.
And you have drones?
We don't do the drones that much anymore.
Yeah, not that much.
Hurt his feelings, you know?
I know.
That look on his face.
Well, we got to where the drones, you know, I had to keep re-upping my Part 107 certification.
You have to have a license to fly
those. And
then
you had to get, you know, approval. And it was such a difficult problem. I mean, tedious process that it took so much time away from what we usually do with Twin Blends. So now if somebody needs drone work, we have our buddy Mark Walker with Skywalker Images, and he's doing the Jimmy Davis Bridge construction. They hired him to do that, but we'll get Mark Walker to do any drone work that we need.
Okay. Do you still have any drones?
Yeah,
we have.
I still have a drone. Yes.
Okay.
And I use it probably.
Do you ever fly it over Barksdale?
No. I don't want to get shot down.
That was not us.
Actually, I don't think it even lift off. They got that geo fence. Somebody lifted it off.
Somebody
I told you. That's
off.
What I was. Yeah. We were, and I got Scott McKay going to join us after after the 8 o'clock news, because 5 nights.
Yeah.
Somebody flew multiple drones over Barksdale. They couldn't be jammed.
That's crazy.
And I've got a friend of mine that does commercial production.
Yeah.
And
you get anywhere near there, it's jammed.
He said we were going to try to find some footage near Barksdale, not over the base, obviously.
Yeah.
He said we couldn't even get it off the ground. So NFC,
no fly zone, NFC.
So anyway, so thank you guys so much for coming out. This is exciting. It people is. Can see like a little clip maybe on
yeah,
your
we got we teasers. Have
several
we
teasers
got
on the teasers.
On, get an on idea. Your get an idea.
Facebook. So. Yep. And also, you've got a website also.
Yep, twinblendshistory.com. Yep. We also want to say hi to our beautiful cousins, Ronnie and Jody Walker. They're 100% support us. Yeah. We love them to death. They're listening now. They're you know my, Ronnie and Jody.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Hi to Big Country Ronald Hendrickson. He's always.
Yeah, he messages. Every time we're on, he messages. Good friend.
Hey, Ronald.
Well, thanks for listening. Both, yeah, Ronnie and Jody, just wonderful. I worked with their son for years and got to know the whole family. And their other son is my dentist.
Yeah,
I am. And,
yeah.
So
and Aaron, she's sweet. She's
just a
they're great.
Wonderful
they were
family.
Great. They're great
yeah,
cousins.
Yeah. And thank you guys so much. I, thank you not thank only y'all. For coming out, but for what you do.
Thank you.
It's just as somebody that's fascinated with history, but more specifically Shreveport history, mm-hmm. I deeply appreciate and I love having you guys out and talking with you.
Anytime. We enjoy it. We have fun. We get to meet so many great people. So not like you though, but other
other
people.
Other people. Other not people. In the public. Right. Not in
Reuben
here.
Reuben and
yeah.
Thomas, yeah.
Yeah.
Reuben and Thomas, NBI.
Yeah, get out of here. Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
All right, since you guys are still here, let me ask you real quick, because of first of all, when you started Twin Blends, Mike and Mark Mangum, Twin Blends, Northwest Louisiana History Hunters, when you guys started, you had full-time jobs.
Yeah.
You
yes,
both had
did.
Full-time jobs.
Yep.
And so you did it on the side.
Yes. Yep.
And all of this research that you would do, I mean, I know you would spend hours mm-hmm. at the LSUS photo archives
yes.
in going through pictures
every
and
chance,
going
every
through collections.
Day,
we had a vacation, you know, we were off a day.
In the evening sometimes when it was open, so yeah.
Just fascinating. And now you're both retired.
Yep.
Is there a way that you monetize?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you've put in so much work.
Yeah.
Please well, tell me what you, you know, what do you, what can people do
we have,
to help support what
well,
y'all
we,
do?
We greatly appreciate all the help we get, which we have so much expenses, but we have a Patreon, we have Venmo, and we go around doing speaking engagements too. And so we charge a fee for that. And that's what we love to do, really meet
yeah,
people.
We're going to be putting out something here in a little bit that'll have a P.O. box and Venmo and Patreon so people can help. Because
it gets expensive.
It
really
does.
Right,
I can imagine. And,
does,
and you yeah. have to, you buy equipment. You,
yeah.
You've,
yes.
Even just software, you have to pay for
that's
software.
Right, that's right.
It costs.
Yeah.
Right.
So a lot of things we have to wait. Well, when's our next speaking engagement? We'll get paid so we can use yeah. that money to buy some more equipment and yeah. stuff like that.
So we
that.
Appreciate any help we
yeah.
can get. It helps us further our search for history. You
yes.
know?
Okay. And so you say a Patreon account. How do people look that up? Is it through your Facebook?
Yeah, they can go on our Facebook page, and or you can just search Twin Blends Patreon. You should be able to search that on Google search and stuff.
And we'll be
like
putting
okay.
something out here in yeah. a little bit, because I'm going to get a P.O. box. That way, you know, we can, if people want to send checks and stuff like that,
yeah,
to kind of help.
Contact us. You can feel free to send a donation, because every yeah. little bit helps.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bit, yeah. And we do have people that signed up for Patreon every month. They, you know, they pay. You know, has subscription and stuff, and that really helps. So, yeah. But we'll be putting something out so people will know, you know, how they can help.
And people, and I know people think, well, my $5 a month isn't going to make
every
any difference.
Does.
But it
every
does.
Really it does.
$10
it
a
really
month
does.
Can it because does. It adds to somebody else's.
Yep.
That's right.
And we have people every time say, a lot of people tell us, y'all are the first thing that I look at when I get up in the morning. Or they'll say, y'all are the only reason I'm on Facebook is to see, you know, your.
And if you enjoy our content, yeah. please consider helping us out, because yeah. every little bit does help.
It does.
And they didn't ask me to do this, yeah. but
We appreciate
I wanted to, yeah, be able to.
Because it's hard to ask, hey, we need some help out
there.
I know.
Well,
so.
And we have so much more. Everything we posted in the past, we got more than what we posted in the past that we could post that we're trying to get out there.
Yeah.
So. Just fascinating. Yeah. Well, keep it up.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Love you guys. Appreciate you coming out.
Yeah, thank you.
Scott McKay from the Hayride going to be joining us after the news, top of the hour. This ownership of the golf club at Stonebridge and Old Oaks by Chinese government just bothers me, and it doesn't seem to bother anybody else. We'll talk to him about that. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. 1017 FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty, Aaron on vacation, Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, my dear friend Scott McKay joining us from the Hayride. Scott, good morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you today?
I take it that you people are not threatened by a tropical storm like we are.
No, we're not. Is it getting bad where you are?
No, not really. Last night, though, for about 30 minutes, it's like kind of, I guess, one of the outer bands of this thing. It was kind of impressive. It wasn't a hurricane, but I mean, there was very loud wind, rain rather,
right,
smacking up against my window. So I got a little taste of hurricane season last night.
Oh, you can have it. Thank you very much. Well, we have 180 degree temperatures right now.
So a hurricane is, you know, might be a nice cooling off period for you,
exactly,
if you got one.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott, exactly. We were talking yesterday. For some reason, this just got back under my skin. This property that's owned. Now, it's owned by a Chinese-American businessman, Eugene Xi.
Right.
And Eugene Xi is described as a former member of the Communist Party of China. And we're talking about the golf club at Stonebridge and Old Oaks. Now, it's to me, it's not a coincidence that a member of the Communist Party of China owns 300 acres surrounding one of the most vital military installations in our country.
Well, yeah, and then in the middle of the bombing operations, as Operation Epic Fury got started, all of a sudden a swarm of drones flies over Barksdale Air Force Base and shuts the place down for 4 hours.
Shuts it,
you know, and
5 days.
Let me give the caveat first, which is that nothing has been proven on any of this, but it is incandescently clear that if you are going to fly a swarm of drones over a sensitive military installation and shut it down, which has happened all the time for the last 3 or 4 years, whether it was Langley Air Force Base, whether it's been Whiteman Air Force Base. I mean, this is to the tune that the War Department says they deal with this stuff like every other day, okay, across the country. It's incandescently clear that the easiest way to get one of these drone swarms going, like, and have it pop up out of nowhere so that it can't be defeated before it takes effect,
mm-hmm,
is you launch it from land close by, and like before anybody can even spot these things on radar, they're over the base. And a golf course is pretty much the most ideal possible piece of land that you could launch these things from. You could launch them off a golf cart, which looks totally inconspicuous while you're doing it. Or, you know, the lawn maintenance equipment that runs at night on a golf course. Nobody notices anything until those drones are in the air. And then they're off over the base. So,
yeah, and let's talk about
the kind of thing. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, let's talk about this. This is 12 to 15 drones. This is a swarm that flew with their lights on. And this is according to confirmed reports. They had long-range control links, non-commercial signals, and were resistant to electronic jamming. And these are large. Yeah. These were huge. They're not these small little drones you buy on Amazon or even commercial drones.
No, they were custom built. And you know, these drones that have affected military bases across the country. I mean, you'll remember, I think it was like 2024 when you had up and down the East Coast, you know, you had this issue. There was, you know, at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia, which they're flying F-22s out of Langley, a couple of bases in New Jersey and some other places where, you know, the whole country was kind of in a panic about this. And then it happened at Barksdale, and it's happened a bunch of times since. Barksdale's incursion was actually fairly small compared to some of these other ones. So,
well, that's,
you know,
really scary.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what's going on with this is that states, and Louisiana's one of them, have passed legislation limiting foreign ownership of land near sensitive sites like military bases. In fact, there were two bills passed this year in the Louisiana legislature's regular session. One of them was a ban on, you know, future ownership. The other one was an expropriation bill, which allows Louisiana's military authority to bring cases to court to expropriate the land in question, which, as to the golf courses around Barksdale, you might see something like that, you know, get into court in Northwest Louisiana fairly soon.
Now, Scott, do we have any idea how long this particular individual has had ownership in this property? Since 2013.
2013. Yes, Joe Biden was vice president.
With. And is this the first instance where we've had trouble like this with drones and the base?
At Barksdale, I don't know of any other ones, which is not to say that, you know, what I know and what I don't know is functionally operational here. I mean, like, it could have happened. The reason we all found out about it was that, you know, we're in the middle of a war and all of a sudden the base gets interrupted by drones. So, I mean, that's why it made a difference. This stuff could be happening all the time, and they're not doing combat operations at Barksdale, and it just never gets out. So I have no idea whether this has been going on for, you know, 13 years or it was a one-time deal.
The drones flew with their lights on. They loitered for multiple hours at a time and performed evasive maneuvers designed to probe the base's security and response times. This was very coordinated.
And I know that, you know, we're talking in, you know, hypotheticals here for the most part, but is there any, what indicators are there that it is linked to this particular owner and these particular properties?
Well, there's not.
Okay.
There's nothing definitive on this. It's just, you know, it's sort of an obvious assumption, I guess, that
sure.
A lot of people are operating on. But I mean, it makes perfect sense. If you have a golf course, if you have two golf courses and one is north and one is south,
right.
And the way this thing was described,
hundreds
is,
of acres,
right, is that the drones basically scattered. Well, I mean, you know, a golf course is a big plot of land, and you could scatter, you know, 15 drones over two golf courses really easily and then just run over and pick them up with golf carts. And we don't know that that's what happened in this case back in March, but it's kind of easy to see that, yeah, this is likely, you know, the contours of what happened. And the big thing is, it's not like the drone swarm flew away and they tracked it on radar across Northwest Louisiana.
Right.
I mean, it left the base and it disappeared, which means those drones landed like really, really close to the base.
Right.
Very quickly.
So there's no proof on this that I've seen, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of obvious.
Scott, we got to take a break. Can you hold with us?
Yeah, sure.
Because I've got the Air Force and the military's response to this, and I want to get your opinion on that when we get back. We'll take a quick break. Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Hayride, Scott McKay joining us. Scott, we were talking about the drone incursion at Barksdale in March. And let me just see if I can kind of read this real quickly. This is the response from the Global Strike Command, AFSTRAT Air. And I quote, to clear up inaccurate and incomplete reporting beginning Monday, March 9th, Barksdale Air Force Base experienced several unauthorized drone incursions that varied in duration and number of drones. Out of an abundance of caution in response to the initial event, Barksdale base leadership issued a shelter-in-place order for the morning of March 9th, lifted the same morning. Operations from Barksdale AFB continue unabated, and the incident remains under an active federal investigation. Then it goes on to talk about developing tailored solutions, including training efforts for unique operational challenges. And then it closes by saying, however, the details and locations are being withheld due to operational security. So they're basically not saying anything, which I understand. Look, I'm not faulting the military. No, I'm not faulting them at all.
I'm gonna keep my mouth shut too.
But right, I'm not, because I understand national security, but I do want some answers.
Well, and what I don't know is how high these things were flying and so forth. Because to me, it seems like, you know, the number one counter drone measure is some guys in Jeeps riding around with a 50 cal to blow these things out of the sky. And, I don't know if we do that. Maybe it's not a bad idea to look into it. I we'll see. Mm-hmm. But. And let me say this, I am not accusing Eugene G. of flying these drones over Barksdale.
Okay? Absolutely.
But what I would say is, based on what we know about these things, this was not a hobby club.
No.
Okay? Like, you wouldn't invest the kind of resources that it takes to custom build drones with, you know, counter jamming equipment on them. If you're just out for a good time, like this is some sort of, you know, organized syndicate that has these things and is deploying them. And, you know, is it China? Is it Iran? Is it Cuba?
Is it Amazon?
It matter? I mean, we these guys know. All work together. No, it's not Amazon. Amazon's drones can be jammed. That much I know.
Right. Well, let me just say, again, we're not accusing anybody of anything, but there are a lot of questions when a former member of the Communist Party of China, this is undisputed, Xi previously held positions in the Chinese government, including serving as an official with the United Front Work Department, an arm of the CCP, which basically operates propaganda and marketing.
Right. So, I don't want to cast aspersions, but why do you want a golf course next to Barksdale Air Force Base? There aren't other golf courses you could buy.
Well, there.
What do you want those two golf
two
courses
of them?
For?
Right on the north and south borders of our Air Force Base.
And there's a certain you get to the point with a fact pattern where it's like, OK, this is a little too peculiar for me to just, you know, wave it off as a coincidence. It's not one golf course. It's two.
And he's not a United States citizen. Is that correct?
I don't know how you cannot be a U.S. citizen and own land close to a military base.
American businessman.
Oh, OK.
I've done some research on this, and there are 19 states, they're all red states other than Virginia, that have passed legislation that bans foreign ownership of land near military, sensitive areas, including military bases. In Arizona, they passed it, and Katie Hobbs, the Democrat governor, vetoed it. And, you know, in Democrat legislatures, you know, bills like this can't get off the ground, which is, I don't want to get partisan about this, but like, it seems to me this would be the kind of thing that you could address at the state level in 50 different states. There's legislation in Congress. There's two or three different bills that, you know, they can't get out of committee because you know, various lobbying interests are standing in the way of this stuff. Which, if, you know, for reasons I don't think are involved with, you know, foreign espionage, but they don't want government regulating who can own what land. And that's fair, except when people are flying sophisticated drones over military installations while combat operations are going on.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, look, we're not talking about sugar subsidies here. This is something that's, it's a little bit more, you know, visceral in terms of national security. And, it's going to have to be addressed at the state level. And it's very weird that this is not a, like, slam dunk bipartisan issue. Although in some places, certainly, like, in, you know, the Senate passed the expropriation bill 38-0 in Louisiana. So, you know, good on Louisiana's Democrats for getting on board with that.
And let's follow up. I mean, and you can do research on this, and sources like Fox News and ABC News. This is not some conspiracy on some far.
Newsweek had a really good piece on this after it happened at Barksdale. I would, you know, search Newsweek's archives for March, and you'll find it. And it's a pretty in-depth article that talked about this threat and what's been going on across the country to sort of, you know, to find a way to deal with it. You can't let people fly drones over your Air Force bases.
Well, you can't let hostile foreign governments own property around military installations, hundreds of acres of property. It just is a lot of questions and not a lot of answers right now. And I just want to I want to keep this in the forefront. Scott, thank you for jumping on with me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. 101.7 FM, 710. Keel Aaron on vacation. Thomas Avalone in. Micah McCarty.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. I didn't get a chance even to get with. We talked with Scott McKay last half hour about just the Chinese Communist Party member, former member, reportedly former member, owning the golf courses surrounding Barksdale Air Force Base.
Right.
We didn't even get to the point, and I had it in my notes. Do you remember the Chinese spy balloon?
Yes.
Can you believe that was 2023?
Gosh, that seems, I'm not
it,
sure
it
if
seems
that
like
seems
it was
like
last a, month.
Right.
That flew across the country for, what, several days.
Right.
Started over across Alaska, moved over military installations in Montana, sensitive nuclear missile silos.
Right.
And this wasn't just a balloon like just randomly floating along.
Right.
It had propellers and rudders and was able to be controlled.
And my recollection was we were being told it wasn't anything to be too concerned about.
No, it's just it was. Well, we were told at first it was a weather balloon,
right?
But the Navy and Coast Guard did recover portions of the payload, which was about the size of a 20-story building.
That's right. I remember now. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And the Biden administration allowed it to fly across the entire country.
Right.
Now, they say military operations was able to jam a lot of the information that wasn't able to send back.
Well, it's definitely going to become more and more of an issue. That's for sure.
So I wanted to get into that as well. Thomas, I want to ask you, you've had a major life change.
I have. I have. I was asked to come in and co-host the Keel Morning Show.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm super jazzed about it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Thomas Avalone in for Erin. She's on vacation. She'll be back on Monday. You, have you been getting any sleep? Because you've got a two-week-old in the house now.
I do.
Not your first child.
No, not my first. Not my first. But I just figured I'm up, so I might as well come in and be on the radio for a couple of hours. That this is my vacation.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Erin leaves when she's on vacation. I come in when I'm on vacation.
And I didn't ask. Do you want to tell us about your son?
I would love to.
Okay.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. You know,
I understand.
Don't want to expose a lot of private information.
Sure.
But you've got a brand new son.
A brand new baby. Five fingers, five toes on each hand and foot, and we're very, very pleased about that. He was born on July the 6th, so we're very pleased to have him home.
And what's his name?
His name is August. August Luigi Avalone.
He's little, Irish then, right?
He is. Yeah. He is Irish. The palest skin you've ever seen. Right. The reddest hair. We can't explain it, or at least I can't.
Yeah.
My wife might have some explaining to do. But my wife.
Your mailman Angus has nothing to do with
it. That's right. Yeah. My wife found herself reading Lonesome Dove during her pregnancy. So August is one of the characters.
Augustus McCray.
That's right. And I was born in August. My mom was born in August. So it seemed to be a good fit. And Luigi was my father. So we decided to.
That's awesome.
Give him that name.
I love that. So are you going to call him August, Gus?
I mean, we've never really been nicknamed people. We've got a Lucas. We have a Sebastian. You know, the temptation is for folks to call them Luke or Bastion or
Seb.
There's Seb that's out there, I guess, but we tend to stick with the full name. I've never been a Tom or a Tommy.
Thomas.
Sometimes people will call my brother Lewis Lou, but that's usually how you know that they're a telemarketer. Is Lou in? Let me talk with Lou. But
if somebody calls me and asks for Ronald, I know they're
right.
They don't know me.
I'm not opposed to Gus. He seems like he could be a Gus or an Augie.
Yeah,
we'll see. But right now, we're sticking with August.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Thank your lovely wife for letting you get out of the house.
That's right. I will.
Thomas Avalone in for Erin. 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Back of Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Thomas Avalone in for Erin. You said you took your kids to go see Moana.
Moana, yes.
Tinseltown.
Tinseltown.
How was it?
It was, it was good. It hasn't made the biggest splash at the box office.
Okay.
See what I did there?
Was it woke?
It was not woke. There was not anything... Not anything woke or concerning about it.
I never saw the animated version, so I don't know.
Well, my kids have taken to Moana for sure, especially my middle kid.
He
just belts out those songs. So when I saw they were making a live action, I said, "We're going to have to go check this out in the theater." So they had a blast. So
well, my daughter was little. Little Mermaid.
Right.
When that came out, especially on home video.
Uh-huh.
That was the first movie she ever latched onto.
Right.
As a child.
Right.
And it's kind of funny, her being such a swimmer, but that's what appealed to her.
Sure.
And she loved, I mean, we had Little Mermaid clothes. We had sheets. We had, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
So when that came out live action a few years ago, as an adult, I took her to go see the live action when she lived in Dallas, and so that was great. And I didn't notice anything there wasn't anything offensive as far as woke and,
right.
and or destroying the ecology, whatever.
Right.
Unlike Cinderella.
Right.
Where that idiot that starred in that film trashed the original animated version from the 30s.
Snow White.
It was Snow White.
Snow White. Thank you, Ruben. Snow White.
Right.
Saying the prince was a stalker and assaulted the Snow White while she was asleep. He kissed her and just trashed the film.
Right. Right.
And then they tried to make it more, I don't know, anyway. So and, Moana and, wasn't that way.
No, it wasn't. And even at that point, even, you know, there are certain instances where the, you know, the actors may say certain things in interviews, but, and it doesn't necessarily mean that that those ideas that they're espousing in interviews when asked questions necessarily made their way into the movie. But at that point, it doesn't even matter. It's become part of the marketing, right?
Yeah.
You know, it may not be it may not be anything the director or the writer put in there. It's just some bonehead thing that they.
But I think they did change some of the story.
I think that that is one of the instances where they did. But yes, in my house, we've got Encanto, we've got Moana, and we have Coco on a rotation. Those are the films of choice at this time. So,
you know, I don't remember watching a Disney movie until my sister was born.
Right.
My dad made me watch Kung Fu movies. I really like Invincible Armor with Jet Li.
Well, you know, I may have to put that into the circuit.
Yeah,
then.
Pick up a few Kung Fu movies. They're right. Great. And boys love them.
I'm going back through Lonesome Dove, by the way, for about the fifth time.
Right.
I think it would probably be my favorite book.
Well, I haven't read it myself, but I hear good things.
Oh, so good. Thank you for coming out.
No problem.
We'll see you in the morning.
Thank you for having me. I'll be here.
Thomas Avalone in for Aaron. Micah McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.